So this is the last lecture of this series, and I promised to give you a sketch of the proof of the Langlands Tunnel Theorem. So let rho be a two-dimensional Galois representation be an irreducible two-dimensional Galois representation with a solvable image. If you don't mind, I'll change this Q to F. For an arbitrary algebraic number field with solvable image, then there exists a cuspidal automorphic representation pi equal to pi of rho such that the arc L function, so this is an automorphic representation belonging to GL2 of the Adels of F, so that the Arden L function attached to rho is the same as the automorphic L function attached to pi. So this is not only establishes the Arden conjecture of the holomorphy of the non-abelian L function, but it also establishes the reciprocity conjecture. Pardon me? Yeah, this is the finite L function. So this is the convention, Sarnak convention, that I will adopt. This is always the finite L function. Or if you were to interpret it as the complete L function, this is still okay too. Yeah. Okay, so this is the main goal. There's a kind of a very quick proof of this fact using the de Lincere theorem, and which works only over F equals Q. If the de Lincere theorem can be generalized to an arbitrary base field, this, the same proof will work. Recall last time, so let me say there's a quick proof. When F equals Q, that uses the de Lincere theorem, and so what does this theorem say? It says the following: let F be a holomorphic loop form weight 1 with Nevin typus on gamma naught of n. Then there is a Galois representation rho sub f two-dimensional Galois representation. I have to have determinant. well, it's, no, this is fine. Yeah, this is fine. Such that the L function attached by Hecker, L function attached to Hecker for classical modular form is equal to the Artin L function attached to rho sub f. So this is the Dillon-Serre theorem. And the proof of the Langlands tunnel theorem uses very elementary properties of the alternating group on four letters, which I will review. So review some group theory. Which are going to be left as exercises. The first thing is that the alternating group A4 has a normal subgroup of order 4. I mean, it's a group of order 12, and the 2-Seeler subgroup is a 2-2 group. So A4 has a normal 2-Seeler subgroup. Which is isomorphic to. That's a normal 2-Seeler subgroup, V, let's call it, isomorphic to a 2-Kopf, the Klein 4 group. That's, the second property is that A4 has no elements of order 6. And this is, we always pull this one out of basic course in group theory or basic course in algebra, where you show that the converse of Lagrange's theorem doesn't hold, that the order of an element has to divide the order of the group, and conversely, if the order, if I have a divisor D of the order of the group, there's not necessarily an element of order D. So A4 has no elements of order 6. I've listed these in the order of complexity. The third thing is that A4 has a unique irreducible three-dimensional representation. Call it rho tet. Which is induced from the Klein 4 group, where theta is any non-trivial character of V. Okay. So these are three basic things which you can do at home or do in your head, depending on who you are. I think that's enough. Yeah, that's probably enough. One more fact from general definitions, but not necessarily group theory. So so this is one more fact, but has nothing to do with A4. General fact about the adjoints representation. So let GL3 of C be the space of matrices of trace 0, 2 by 2 matrices of trace 0. A collection of 2 by 2 matrices is a 4-dimensional vector space over C, and now that you impose one trace condition, it becomes a 3-dimensional vector space. And GL2 of C acts on the space as follows. You take a group element and you take a matrix the action is just simply GA minus AG. Or is it AG minus GA? What?
Wouldn't it be better to call it the GL2C?
Sorry, yes. This?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, GL2C.
But,
sorry, SL2C. Okay, yeah, you're right. Sorry. So it acts, is that what was worrying him? I was wondering what was going on. Yeah. Okay, so the action of GL2C on SL2C is given by G acting on GA minus AG. And this is a proper action because the trace of GA is the same as trace of AG. So this gives rise to a representation. This gives a representation denoted adjoint from GL2C to GL3C. Okay. And if I'm doing it. Yeah, GAG inverse. Yes, the group. Okay, so we get. What did I want to say? I want to. Yeah. So if I take any two-dimensional representation, so if I have. So if rho is a two-dimensional representation, if any representation, then add rho is just the composition with. It's a notation that I will use. It gives me a three-dimensional representation of G in this way. Okay, so it's just a general remark that I want to make. I mean, it has nothing, it's no fact as such. And now I think I can put everything together neatly. So that's, as far as I see, that's the basic group theory that's needed. Some representation theory that we need is as follows. So some representation theory. Goes in. So remember, I spoke about base change and automorphic induction. So if E over F is a cyclic extension, cyclic Galois extension of prime degree, I'll say, then we have the base change map. So we have the base change map E over F from the space of automorphic forms. So automorphic forms of F into automorphic forms of E. And then we have the automorphic induction map, which can be denoted this way. And going from the space of automorphic forms of E to the automorphic forms of F, which I defined in previous lectures. So these maps exist. In the special K, just to give you an indication of how the base change L function looks, so supposing I have a cuspidal automorphic representation of the base field F, the L function attached to the base change L function is just take S pi tensor chi, where chi runs over all the characters of the Galois group of E over F. So you just twist it by the character. Now, I know that this begs for some form of explanation, because each chi, because this is an abelian extension, each chi can be thought of as an Edel, corresponds to an Edel class character, and this is just the Rank and Selberg of automorphic forms corresponding to such a thing. So this corresponds. So this is, well, just leave it like that. And then the, if you give me, if pi is a cuspidal automorphic representation upstairs, then the L function attached to the automorphic induction of pi from F to E, this L function is defined as a product of, is basically defined as a product of is defined in such a way that the local part, the V part, is just the L function attached to all the primes W that divide V. So this is at the unramified V. This is how it looks. I mean, so the L function is the same. You haven't really as a Dirichlet series, they're the same, but the local factors are given in this fashion for this particular object. Okay, so these two things, that these maps exist, this is, well, Langlands for GL2. And Arthur Clausel for GLM. For GLM. And all we'll need is the GL2 situation. And so much of the theory of base change and automorphic induction that's required for this proof can be found in Langland's Princeton lectures notes, base change for GL2. Okay, so that is one bit. Now, if you wanted to have a quick proof of the Langlands tunnel theorem, everything on the board that I've written down is sufficient to do so using the de Lincere theorem. But if you want to work over arbitrary fields, you need the second fact from representation theory, and that is the Gelbart-Jacquet lift. So this is the existence of lift from automorphic representations of GL2 to GL3, and so one way of saying it would be using this adjoint square map that I have given. So given a cuspidal automorphic representation pi of GL2 Edels, there exists a AdPi, which is a cuspidal, well, let me see, which is a automorphic representation of GL3. Yeah. Yeah, given by given as follows. Well, I should have put down as an exercise here, so let me just add that in here in this setting that if I have an element rho, if I have an element G in G whose matrix here is, I'm going to use a symbol to indicate that up to semi-simplicity, the eigenvalues of the matrix are alpha and beta, then the adjoint of rho of G is just going to be alpha over beta, 1 beta over alpha. We've already seen that in your lectures earlier, although you didn't, you just assumed that you do that, but that's a simple exercise to check that that's the case. So here we have the following recipe that the matrix, the Langlands matrix that we've associated earlier with pi is the same as the matrix you was associated, which has this property, and as I said here, up to conjugacy, or I should say this way, the symbol. And the fact that add pi is cuspidal if and only if pi is the automorphic induction. Pi is not the automorphic induction. Pi is not of the form, I think my notation, which way am I going? So if you see, automorphic induction is always from the top guy to the bottom guy, so I really should be putting E here and F there. So E here and F in my notation. So it's the automorphic induction from E to F, although E is a field containing F, of some theta, where theta is a Hecker character, and theta is a Hecker character. Let me say, E over F is firstly a quadratic extension. It's quadratic. And theta is a Hecker character of E. Yeah, that's right. Okay, so this is, I think, these are all the prerequisites for one more notion. One more notion, and that is, again, representation theory. The notion of Galois invariance. Of automorphic representations. So let's say let pi be a automorphic representation of my top field, GLN, let's say E. So here I have E over F as a Galois extension. And what I would like to do is describe a Galois action on these. So what is the meaning of an automorphic representation? It corresponds, a cuspidal automorphic representation would be corresponding to a subspace of square integral functions on this Adel space. So there are functions on the group. And since the Galois group acts on E, it will act on the functions in the natural sort of way. So if you give me a function F, and you give me an automorphism eta, so let's say eta is in the Galois group, and F is in the space of pi, then eta acting on F is just simply going to be F of eta inverse acting on G. So these are elements of the Adel ring. And so the Galois group is acting on the Adel, the Adels. So this makes sense, and this is the function you mean. And this gives us a notion of the Galois conjugate of pi with respect to eta. So this defines, this gives us the notion of eta of pi, where we kind of apply eta to all the functions in this fashion. So that gives us a representation once we have a Galois conjugate of pi. And we say that capital pi is Galois invariant if all eta of pi's are the same as pi. So pi is called Galois invariant if pi, eta of pi is pi for all eta in the Galois group. Okay. That takes care of prerequisites. I mean, there are a few more prerequisites that could probably be discussed, but I think I will leave it at that. Maybe I keep that. So we have E over F, and G is the Galois group. And so let rho be a two-dimensional, irreducible two-dimensional representation . Now last time I mentioned this famous theorem of Klein that tells us that the image of rho in PGL2C. So we have modeled by the scalars, and you get a map from G into PGL2C. And the image of rho is either cyclic, it's a finite subgroup of this thing, so it's either cyclic, dihedral, A4, S4, or A5. And as I said, the proof of this fact is not hard. It can be found in an appendix on Lang's book, Modular Forms Given by Feit. Makes a nice group theory exercise. And according as the image is cyclic dihedral, A4 we call it tetrahedral, S4 is octahedral, and this is the icosahedral case. According as that, you speak of rho as being one of these cases. Now, let's look at the subfield fixed by the Klein 4 group. So you have this following picture. And by Galois theory, you know that this is a cubic extension. Yeah, we're in the A4 case. So I should have made one remark. In the cyclic and dihedral case, we know that the representation is automorphic. So I'm going to assume that, and I'm going to use that also. So let's suppose, now look at that's the case that Langlands discusses in his book. This is a cyclic Galois extension, and so now if you have this group G, you have this representation rho, we could restrict our attention, we could restrict the representation rho to the subgroup H. So let E be the fixed field of V. And consider rho restricted to this field E sub V. So rho, that is, as a representation okay, now it turns out that this is a two-dimensional representation, and now if I take the image of that, it turns out to be dihedral. So this is a little exercise, okay? So this is it. And you can believe this, kind of, because this is almost abelian. It's either abelian or some, apart from some two-factor, it's abelian. So it's a dihedral kind of an extension. So it's clear that a little reflection shows that rho restricted to EV is dihedral. And so, by the work of Hecke, we know that it is, and Artin, we know that it is corresponding to a automorphic representation on EV. So by the work of Artin and Hecke, we know there's a automorphic representation capital pi of GL2 KV. I think it's 4. Well, you know, this whole thing is not A4. This whole thing could be, you see, when you factor out by the scalars, it's A4, yeah. So when you factor out by the scalars, it's going to be, it's going to be, it's usually going to be bigger. I mean, this extension is not an A4 extension. It's mod out by the scalars, then it's an A4 extension. So you have this pi of GL2 of the Edel ring of the field EV, and which has the property, the L function of capital pi is the Artin L function attached to this extension E. Then you show that this capital pi must be the is Galois invariant, and that's obvious in some sense from here, from this formulation. Next, we check. We show that capital pi is this capital pi is Galois invariant with respect to this Galois group here, and therefore I didn't tell you why I introduced this thing. This notion of Galois invariance tells us when an automorphic form was the base change of something. So let me just say that since I didn't say it there. So if capital pi is Galois invariant, then by the theory of base change, there is a pi which is an automorphic representation of a f, so that, well, GL star of AF, whatever it is, so that the capital pi is the base change from U over F of little pi. I mean, that's the reason why one introduces this notion of Galois invariance, to recognize which automorphic forms were the base change lifts of something downstairs. So here, you recognize that this is Galois invariant, must be a base change lift of something, so thus, there exists a little pi in the space of automorphic forms of GL. This is a general fact for any n, but here we're in the context of GL2, so it's just GL2 of a f, so that capital pi is the base change lift of little pi. Okay, so now, remember, the whole name of the game is to come up with an automorphic representation little pi so that Ls rho is equal to Ls pi. And this up to here, it's been relatively smooth, it's already pretty good to indicate that a good chunk of the Euler factors match, namely those that part that corresponds to primes that split completely in the extension. So let me tell you why. I'll leave that on the board too. So thus, LS pi LS pi twisted by chi LS pi twisted by chi squared, where chi is the cubic character corresponding to this abelian extension, equals the Artin L function rho corresponding to this extension E over EV. And if you remember my functoriality properties of Artin L functions, this is like rho restricted to H, which is the same as the Artin L function rho corresponding to the full extension, rho twisted by the abelian character this equation. And if P splits completely, or if V splits completely in E, then what we have is that chi of P is going to be 1, chi squared of P is going to be 1, so you're doing nothing to the Euler factors. And so the cube of one Euler factor is equal to the cube of the other Euler factor. And so the Euler factors actually are equal, because the cube is a characteristic polynomial or something, so you just take that. So then we see that, what do we see? We see that the Langlands matrix that we associated to pi has the same characteristic polynomial as the rho, matrix attached to the Frobenius automorphism. Okay, so this is what we see for split primes. So we already see this. This is what we're after for all V. But we already see this for split primes. So far it was just basic restriction of representations. Now there are two ways to finish the proof. The easy way and the hard way. So I'll do the easy way first, okay? The easy way is, to use the Dillon-Serre theorem for F equals Q. So in the case F equals Q, there is an easy way to finish the proof. By the way, so what have we done so far? We've managed to all we did is this. We took our representation rho, and we kind of restricted it to this thing and obtained from here some automorphic representation capital pi, and we realized it must be the base change of something, so we found little pi here. But remember, pi is going to have the same base change as pi twisted by the cubic character, pi twisted by chi squared. So all these three things will have the same base change lift to upstairs. So the pi, the little pi that you're after, could be any one of these three, and the way you pin it down is by comparing the central character. So choose pi so that the central character of pi is the same as the determinant of rho. The determinant of rho is a one-dimensional character, so we want to pin it down in such a fashion. Now, and actually, because there's a little exercise to show there's a unique choice. It's a little exercise to show uniqueness, that it can be done, uniqueness. So we have a candidate, little pi, downstairs. Now for f equals q, if f equals q, the little pi correspond is a automorphic representation on GL2 of the adels of Q. That means it's either corresponding to a Mas form or a holomorphic form. In this case, you check that this actually corresponds to a holomorphic form. One checks pi corresponds to a holomorphic. This comes by checking the gamma factors and comparing central characters. So once having done that, we know let's say corresponds to a holomorphic form F, say, then by de Lin-Sayre, there exists a rho sub F, which is a Galois representation, which matches up LS rho sub F. And we already recognized that. Yes, because that comes again from the Ramanujan estimates. Yeah. Corresponds to homework weight one. Thanks. I mean, these are Galois representations, so we know that. We already know it here, but all these are weight one. There'll be weight one, yeah. Yeah, you right, but you have to, that's right, you have to check the determinant character and show that it's it actually is odd in this case. So if it's odd, it has to correspond to a holomorphic form. Because the Mas ones will correspond to the even things, okay? So you get something like this. And now, what do we have? We have a Galois representation, rho sub f, which agrees with rho at all the split primes. So we have, okay, so we have two Galois representations, rho that I started with, and rho sub f constructed by the de Lin-Sayre theorem, which have the property that as Galois representations, they're matching up at the split primes. Now you use Chebotarov to finish the job. So we consider the Art and L function LS rho tensor rho F and see that it has a pole, and by Chebotarov see the primes that split completely in E has density 1/3. So on those primes, this is going to have this is going to give rise to a pole. So what you do is you look at this and you look at this twisted by chi, and then you look at the LS rho tensor rho F twisted by chi squared, and then you fiddle a little bit. I won't give all the details. You fiddle a little bit and realize that for example, if you look at log L S rho tensor rho F. Oops. This thing is basically 3 times 1 over P of the S. P splits completely in E. And so it comes out that this is log 1 over S minus 1. And the only way irreducible Artin L functions, the thing is that rho is irreducible and rho f is irreducible. Rho f twisted by these abelian characters is irreducible. The only way, if I have two Galois representations which are irreducible Galois representations, the only way that the Artin L function of the kind of like the tensor product representation has a pole is if one is isomorphic to the other. So this shows that implies that rho is isomorphic to OF, twisted by chi for some chi. So this is the way you would finish it off painlessly, at least relatively speaking, that is, if you're happy with the Dillon-Sayre theorem. No, you can't because, let me think, why can't, I think actually what you'd need to use a non-cubic phase change, yes. The answer is yes. You know, the only trick in the tunnel argument is that this is not going to be a Galois extension. And so you can still use the non-cubic phase change lift, and the argument should go through, yeah.
Okay, but you still need the non-cubic.
Yeah. Yeah, you'll need the hard thing, yeah. I don't think you can do that without... You need to get hold of some candidate. We got hold of this candidate the same. Okay, yeah. You have to get somebody here, and then the Dillon-Sayre provides you a Galois representation neatly to kind of do this Rankine-Selberg on Galois representations rather than... Okay, okay, so we have that. I'll get to that. Oops. I'll get to that, yeah.
It comes from A4, A4.
No, it doesn't. What he shows is it eventually comes from a dihedral thing. With integer, he rules those out. You'll see, let me try and finish quickly, run through this, okay? You'll see the argument. Those are ruled out. No, they don't come from, there are no Moss forms which correspond to Galois representation whose image is A4. That's what he proves, in fact. Okay. Let's see. So you have this. Now, if you want to not use the Dillon-Sayre theorem, you'll have to use this Gelbart-Jacquet lift. So you have a candidate. So we came this far and found our capital pi, and we know that it's the base change lift, so we found 3 candidates. We pin one down with this condition, so you get some pi in your possession, and now the final punchline is that you look at the adjoint representation. So now look. At my notation, rho add that. Okay, and this representation is a 3-dimensional representation. Remember, when you start with a 2-dimensional one, it's a 3-dimensional representation. A4, and it's that one, corresponding to that one, corresponding to theta is a non-trivial character. This is a remark of Sayre. This is what started the thing, the character of A, V. So this is a dihedral object here, and so we know that it's automorphic. So thus, can I take this thing off? You have your two-dimensional representation, and you can look at now this three-dimensional representation that you get, and this is that, okay? You prove this fact that it's still irreducible by studying what it does when you restrict it, it's still irreducible, okay? So when you restrict it to a subgroup and it's irreducible, you use that fact and show that it's this thing. So there's a little bit of group theory to be done there. And now, so add row is automorphic over F. So there's an automorphic representation that corresponds to it, that is, i.e., pi of add row exists. Okay. Now, you see that by noticing that this is just a dihedral character. So add row turns out to be dihedral. So of course, it's actually this, and therefore this thing add row corresponds to the art and L function attached to theta, which is theta is a Hecke character. It's a Hecke character of EV. It's a cubic extension, and so by automorphic induction, there's a pi downstairs on GL3. So pi of add row exists, and that's important. So now we compare the Euler factors. So let's do that. See, what we're trying to do is we're trying to show that the AV of pi, as I've indicated before, has the same characteristic polynomial as rho of prob V. So let's say AV of pi has, let's say this guy corresponds to the two eigenvalues AB, and let's say this guy corresponds to the two eigenvalues alpha, beta. We know by this determinant condition that AB has to equal alpha, beta. So we have this constraint. And by comparing the Euler factors of the base change L functions, we deduce that these eigenvalues are equal up to a cube root of unity. So we also know that A equals some zeta alpha, and B equals some zeta prime beta, but the zeta prime times zeta has to be equal to 1, so this has to be zeta squared. So that constraint is used to get these two equations. And we also know that not only does this exist, but this corresponds to the art and L function of pi of add row corresponds to LS add row. Okay, so we know the reciprocity for this particular representation. So we know that the Euler factor of ad rho matches up with the Euler factor of pi of ad rho. And so that gives us the following extra information, that A over B, remember that little exercise about eigenvalues of the adjoint representation, A over B, 1 and B over A as a set of eigenvalues is the same as alpha over beta 1 and beta over alpha. So you have this. You have these facts now. Okay, so what do we have here? We want to say that A over B, alpha, comma beta, is the same set as A, comma B. That's what we'd like to say. So we want the set AB to be the same as alpha beta. What do we know? We know that AB is the same as alpha product, as the product, and we also know that A over B, 1, B over A, equals alpha over beta, 1, beta over alpha. So AV of pi, remember I said it was AB, and so we know those two equations, zeta A alpha, zeta squared beta. So we know this, and we know that rho from B has characteristic values alpha beta. So zeta is a cube root of unity. Now if zeta equals 1, we're done. Because that just means alpha, beta, this is what we want. We want this set, the eigenvalues here, we want these to match up here. So this is your AB. So if zeta equals 1, we're done. If not, well, we just jiggle this equality here and deduce that alpha over beta is equal to plus or minus zeta squared. So we do know this. So this would mean that alpha over beta, so you just plug, zeta alpha, so put zeta alpha here, zeta squared beta there, so that gives you zeta inverse of alpha over beta, has to be one of these guys. Okay. And so after you jiggle the various possibilities, you end up getting this equation using star. Star is here. And so there are several possibilities. If alpha over beta is either zeta squared or minus zeta squared, if it's plus zeta squared, then what happens? Then it would mean that alpha equals zeta squared beta, and so the first matrix is just zeta times zeta squared beta. That's going to be beta because zeta cubed is 1, and the second one is just alpha. So we have AV of pi like this, and rho of frob V is this, and what we have is that the characteristic polynomials are equal. So we're okay here. So we've matched the Euler factor of the automorphic representation with the Euler factor of the Galois representation, so it's okay. Now, if alpha over beta is minus theta squared, then you go back to this adjoint representation and see, then, take the adjoint representation, look at what it's doing to the Frobenius element. You end up getting that the characteristic values of the of this matrix are these. Okay, now zeta is a cube root of unity, and the order of this element is 6. Okay, so by quite property number 2, A4 has no elements of order 6, so this case doesn't really arise. So this has order 6. So this case does not arise, as A4 has no elements of order 4, elements of order 6. This does not arise. So this is the punchline, and we're done. I'll just say a few words about the tunnel part of the Langlands tunnel theorem. That's the only change that needs to be made here is that, as we already discussed, this is a non-Galois extension, and you can use the work of Jacquet, Pies, and Chalaika of non-cubic base change lifts to establish the existence of a little pi, and then more or less the same argument goes through, and then in the end you end up getting a contradiction of a similar nature. Now, in the little time remaining, I just want to indicate this latest paper of Sarnak that corresponds to MOS forms, and which might address your doubts. Yeah, and I think there's already been some progress Yeah, one would, for certain fields, you could play that game. For other totally real fields, I think, certain cases, yeah. But let me point out, you know, this Delin-Serre, although it looks painless on here, but that's all algebraic geometry. I mean, that's very heavy-duty algebraic geometry that gets involved in that. Exactly. Yeah. It is, in a sense, the Gelbart-Jacquet lift approach is the easier approach. Yeah. I just thought that to see something at a glance at least enables you to the other proof enables you to see why the result should be true very quickly. Now, Sarnak has an interesting theorem. So the theorem is let phi be a cusp form. Let phi be a MOS cusp form with integer coefficients. Then the theorem is that phi corresponds to an even irreducible two-dimensional Galois representation image can be explicitly Well, it, whose image is dihedral. Or, yeah, weight zero. Yep, weight zero. Hecker eigenform. I mean, he quickly moves to an automorphic representation with a certain property, so it's got beautiful. Okay. Integers. Yes, yes, yes. Is dihedral or actually A4, as far as I can see on this sheet, but I thought I went through this proof and that last case is ruled out. So there are cases where you cast doubt on Langlands tunnel? Yeah, one has to, yeah, okay. It's a, look, let me go through this proof. Maybe we can figure out what, how this thing is, I don't think it actually arises. I don't know why. And the corresponding eigenvalue is a quarter. Consequently, phi satisfies Ramanujan because it corresponds to a Galois representation. Okay. So, consequently. I think this is for any level. Consequently, phi satisfies Ramanujan. Yeah, once you've got, yeah, this is, you'll see, once, look, it's easier to understand the proof of the theorem than the statement of the theorem. Consequently, phi satisfies Ramanujan. Sketch of proof. Okay, the first step is to look at all the possible images of a Galois representation whose images have integer trace and integer determinant. Okay. So, a little preparation. Independent question. So, if I have a two-dimensional, so here's a little lemma. Any finite subgroup of GL2C whose elements have integer determinant and trace any finite subgroup which has integer determinant trace is conjugate to one of the following groups. U2, let's say U2 modulo plus or minus 1, so I don't have to write so many things. Identity. Group of order 4, V2, the image is U2, yeah, yeah, so just put plus or minus ones on everything to get the final. You want to put it in front, yeah, is V2, So these images are, you know, the Klein 4 group, the dihedral images. B, U3 modulo plus or minus 1. And V3 modulo plus or minus 1. These are also dihedral, S3. Okay, two more cases. Pardon me? We'll have something like that, yeah. Maybe no, there'll be something like 16 elements. V3 has well, it has 10 elements, yeah. Yeah, V3. Did I miss an element in the other one? U3, let me just check. I left out one, sorry. V3 is supposed to have 12 elements. U3 is supposed to have 12 elements. I left out a couple. Sorry about that. One. I know. I mean, the I think the moral is this, that we can give a list. Okay? Let me finish this list. The reason you can calculate this is all you do is you know the images in PGL2C and you try and work back what the pre-images in you, because this is modding out by scalars. So this is what it's a simple exercise. So this is it. So any finite subgroup has to be conjugate to one of these five possibilities. So that's a little group theory fact that we'll use. Okay, so let's remark that if rho is a Galois representation, with integer coefficients, whose L function, has integer Dirichlet coefficients, then this can happen if and only if the image of rho lies in one of the, is conjugate to one of the subgroups, is conjugate to one of the above. Okay, so that's just, so this is the group theory part, just classification of subgroups with that property, and then you now apply to the Artinel function what it means. The image of rho has to be one of these. Yeah. Yeah, that's if and only if each one of these actually occurs. Yeah, he gives examples at the end. Yeah, well, let me okay. Okay, so now what we do is we start with a mass form. Now let phi be our mass form. Let pi be the corresponding automorphic representation. I think he's working over Q. Yeah, he's working over Q. Okay. Yeah, this is not a jet, so there's room for further discussion later. Okay. So you have this LS pi. And by Langlands, okay, so the image of rho, because of the image of rho in PGL2C is either dihedral or tetrahedral, by Langlands we have a Galois representation. It's okay by Langlands since let's see, how does this go? By Langlands, for any Galois representation, rho with image of rho in A, B, or C there exists pi of rho such that that's wrong. So we have these facts. Now, what we do is we take this phi, we take this pi, and we look at the symmetric powers of pi for k 2, 3, and 4. So we have a mass form. Take the corresponding automorphic representation. So it's an eigenform and whatnot. So now take that thing and look at the symmetric powers. We know by Gelbart-Jacquet, Kim Shahidi, that these exist as automorphic representations. So we look at these and just see what happens. So if the symmetric square of pi is not cuspidal, which I rubbed off, the Gelbart-Jacquet theorem tells you when something is not cuspidal, it's basically automorphic induction. So if symmetric square of pi is not cuspidal, by Gelbart-Jacquet, the pi is the automorphic induction of a Hecke character. So there exists a Hecke character, lambda, so that this is a Hecke character, and a little bit of thinking shows that this is a Hecke character of finite order. Okay, give me about 2 more minutes. Okay, give me 5 more minutes. Okay, it's a Hecke character of finite order. By reciprocity, there's a Galois representation, one-dimensional Galois representation. Okay, that you can pull up, and then by automorphic induction, group theoretic induction, that you get a two-dimensional Galois representation to the base field. So this is a Hecke character automorphic induction of lambda corresponding to a quadratic field, corresponding to a quadratic extension of Q. So this is how you get the Galois theory involved. This lambda will correspond to a Galois representation by class field theory, and so there exists epsilon lambda of an abelian character, so that rho is equal to the induction of epsilon lambda. And the Artin L function of rho is the same as the Artin L function of epsilon lambda, or lambda in this case, so this turns out to be equal to Ls pi. So by automorphic induction, we can pull a Galois representation. And now what we have is the Galois representation has integer coefficients. And so we go back to our classification and see that the theorem is true. So we found, what are we trying to find? We're trying to find a Galois representation. So he found it. Okay. So we're done in this case. So we may suppose the symmetric square of pi is cuspidal. Okay, now we look at symmetric cube of pi. Now suppose if the symmetric cube of pi is not cuspidal, then by Kim and Shahidi, pi corresponds to a representation of tetrahedral type. You're right. Okay, so then pi corresponds to a representation rho of the Wey-Dillon group, of the Wey group, of tetrahedral type. So this is how you're pulling the Galois representations. You know, every time something is not cuspidal, there is a Galois representation floating in the background by these criterions that, you know, in the Gelbart-Jacquet case, we know exactly what's going on when it's not cuspidal, and in the Kim-Shahidi case, we know when it's not cuspidal. And in those cases, also, we have the theorem. So in this case, its projection rho is contained in the set of all matrices whose determinant is a square. So G and GL2C. Is 1, rather, determinant is 1. And now, because pi has integer coefficients, that puts a constraint on the representation rho. The determinant of rho has to be 1. So the constraint phi has integer coefficients applies. Determinant of rho is actually 1. And so you can force the the image in GL2C must be U4. But I wrote down U4 over there. Must be U4. How are you getting that? Well, it's plus or minus 1, okay? Because it's integer coefficients, okay? And it's a character, it's a Dirichlet character, and the only possible integer values for a Dirichlet character are plus or minus 1, okay? The determinant of rho. Where did the rho come from? Is that the question? If it's not cuspidal, his theorem tells me that there's a representation rho of the Galois group, essentially, okay, which has the property that LS pi is equal to LS rho. I mean, this is where I'm pulling the Galois representations from, the constraint. That's clear. And then now you have to check, I'm skipping a few steps here, you have to check that the determinant of rho, there are only two possibilities, plus or minus 1, but it's actually plus 1. It's a trivial character. He says here that if the image rho is contained in U2, U3, or U4, then the determinant rho actually has to be 1. That's what he writes in the paper. U2, U3, or U4, too. Comes to the little case where symmetric cube of pi is assumed to be cuspidal now. So we assume that. Yeah, so we have symmetric symmetric cube pi is cuspidal. So we may assume that. And now, again, if the symmetric fourth power is not cuspidal, again, by Kim Shahidi, there's a Galois representation. So again, by there's a Galois representation of octahedral type, but there are no octahedral types here, so we can forget this case of octahedral type. I mean, we're using heavy-duty stuff here. I mean, there's a lot of heavy-duty stuff that goes into this proof, which cannot arise in our case, because why? Because all of these are not octahedral types. So we get a Galois representation from this Kim Shahidi work whenever something is not cuspidal, and we compare the coefficients and deduce that they're not integers in those cases. So finally we assume that this is also cuspidal. So what do we have? We have that all these symmetric powers are cuspidal representations. Thus, they're all cuspidal, and therefore the L functions do not vanish at S equals 1 for these things. So corresponding L functions do not vanish. And so now you use partial pseudo-tate. You also use the fact that the symmetric, because these are all automorphic, you can form Rankine-Selbergs of all automorphic representations. So you can form these symmetric powers, oops, for J, K, 1, 2, and 3, and deduce that the symmetric jth power of pi is analytic and non-vanishing, on real part s equals 1. You deduce that. I indicated in earlier lectures how you can get at these other ones from these tensor products by decomposing this representation. And now, finally, you cook up a polynomial therefore up to 9, 2, 4, 6, 8. Yeah. And now what you do is you look at, consider the following polynomial, T of X. Which has integer coefficients. So this is T of M, whenever it's an integer, it's negative. While T of X is non-negative for X minus 2, 2. So this is just a little high school exercise. So you look at, you concoct this polynomial, and now consider T of lambda pi P, P up to X, divide by pi of X. Okay, so this is going to be a polynomial in the eigenvalues, and all the powers of the eigenvalues will be at most 8, because it's an 8-degree polynomial, right? And there we have pseudo-tate for all of those. So you have uniform distribution for all of those. So by using pseudo-tate, you can see that this converges to minus 2 to 2 of the pseudo-tate distribution, which is x over pi. Oops, I forgot T of x here. So T of x with respect to this measure. So this is what we have. Okay. So now we're in this case where if pi didn't already correspond to a Galois representation by these various tricks, you're now left with this situation. And what do we have here? On the left-hand side, we know that these are all integers, and so that this whole thing is negative. On the right-hand side, well, T of X is non-negative, and it's not identically zero. So it's strictly positive, so you get a contradiction. So this case doesn't arise. This is assuming pseudo-tate, which you have, up to the 8th power. So remember in my earlier lectures, I talked about pseudo-tate and partial pseudo-tate, where if you only knew up to certain powers, you can write down, by the Tauberian results, you know, you have non-vanishing on the line 1, and so you can write down Tauberian results about various these things, and so you can get this part as long as the degree is sufficiently small. If it shoots up to 10 or 11, let's say, we don't know anything about those. But this for which you have because of your work, we know state-to-state up to that point. There's a remark at the end of the paper that Sarnak makes, and he says that Stephen Miller told him that there was a way to avoid the eighth symmetric power by just using a polynomial of degree 6. But still, you need the cube. And you need, cube and 2, 3 and 2, anyway. But you still need a high-powered result in order to deduce this. So this last case, so we get a contradiction, left-hand side is a negative, and the right-hand side is strictly positive. So that finishes the job. I think it also finishes the course. What happened was that we're done because all the coefficients are integers, right? All the Dirichlet coefficients of the L function are integers. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That's why I'm saying that.
No, you didn't rule out A4.
I didn't rule out A4. I ruled out octahedral case. Yeah.
Oh, I see.
Okay, so there's a little tidbit determinant calculation which I've scoffed at, but. There's a few details.
There
still is a possibility. So this is where the A4 business comes in. Okay, so it's a possibility. The case that I was thinking when you asked me, this is the case that's ruled out, I think, from the proof. Okay, so... pardon me? Hold on for a second, yeah. That's ruled out, yes. A4 is also ruled out.
Because you start off with either dihedral, in which case you said blah. So.
Yeah, okay, I think you're right.
Like you proved say two was cuspidal, and then you proved then four had to be cuspidal, or else you get a contradiction, and if sim four is cuspidal, then you got a contradiction. So it looks to me like you ruled assumed. Why don't you just assume if sim square is non cuspidal, get done.
Yeah, if sim squared is not cuspidal, we're done. Yeah, but if sim squared is not cuspidal, we're done, and it's very easy, okay? There's no tetrahedral case in that situation. So we're assuming sim squared is cuspidal, and sim cubed is cuspidal. If it's not cuspidal, it's an A4 thing. This can arise, I think. If it's not cuspidal, then it arises, according to him, from a tetrahedral thing. That kind of, yeah. And so what's ruled out, well, this is certainly ruled out. And then the point is that all of these, whatever is left over, is really not going to occur. Yeah. So where's the MOS form coming in? That's a good question. Let's think. That's a good question. Yeah. All I've seen is integer coefficients, right? Yeah. I think that's right. Yeah. Okay. Here's the thing. If this is a new theorem in the case of MOS forms, maybe that's why he stated it like that. Because if it's not a MOS form, we already know Dillon's theorem. Maybe that's why he stated it like this. It's a little misleading, actually, in the way it's written up, a little confusing. And because certain cases are ruled out, it's also disconcerting to figure out exactly what's proved and what's, you know, what is being classified. So at the moment, it looks like it's a nice theorem, but it's maybe this can be reorganized to state a better theorem.
From a form,
Why not? An art null function can. Yep. I have an example. Take a cubic field, okay? Which, take an S3 extension. Take something like, splitting field of cube root of 2. Take this extension. This is an S3 extension. And in this case, there's the Dedekind zeta function here factors as the Riemann zeta function times a modular L function of a modular form of weight 1. And that corresponds to the one irreducible character that this is, it corresponds to exactly that representation, the two-dimensional representation that you have for that. So this is, and this guy has integer coefficients because this is the Dedekind zeta function of that field. So this is k, zeta k of s. And so zeta k of s over zeta of s is going to, you have a Möbius inversion formula which gives you the number, and it's all integer coefficients, plus or minus ones or something like that. So there is an example like that. So I think this is a good way to finish off the course on applications of symmetric power L functions. Surely I was not exhaustive in my treatment of covering all the applications, and I don't think any single course can do that faithfully. So certainly it's out of the scope of a one-term leisurely course like this, but I hope I have whetted your appetite to rush to the library and learn more. Okay.